Hello, my name is Kennedy Sam, and you're listening to Conversations with Creative Waco on KWBU. On this program, we sit down with creatives and community leaders making an impact in our artistic and cultural sector. We have two guests joining us today. First, we are sitting down with Ashley Stone, founder and director of Footprints Dance Company. In the second half of this episode, you will hear from local musician, singer, and songwriter Melinda Adams. Later on, we'll hear the segment David and Art with David Smith. To kick off the show, we welcome Ashley Stone, founder and director of Footprints Dance Company. Ashley, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you?
I'm great. So are you born and raised in Waco?
No, I'm actually born and raised in Lubbock, Texas.
Oh, so what's that, West Texas?
Yes.
So how did you get to Waco?
My grandparents are from here, and my grandmother got diagnosed with dementia back in 2014, and I moved here to take care of her to prevent her from having to go to a nursing home.
Yes, so that means you've been in the community for quite some time now.
Yes.
So as the founder of Footprints Dance Company, what impact does dance have on your life, and how did that lead you to starting this organization?
Well, the organization actually started back in my hometown. My theater arts teacher in elementary gave me the opportunity to have an after-school job, and I just found that dancing, I loved it. I loved the girls. It turned into inspiring them, talking to them about self-esteem, self-love, all those things. And so it's just developed into this wonderful thing here in Waco. It seemed like I got here and it really blossomed.
Yes. How long ago did you start Footprints?
Footprints started back in 2012.
Okay. Nice. So how many girls are in your company, and what are the age ranges of the ones you work with?
Right now, we have about 27 girls. They age, their ranges are from 5 all the way up to 13.
Okay, so you're starting with, like, babies with no dance experience.
Yes.
So how does that come, like, how do you teach dance to them?
So our younger ones, They're babies, so they like to play. So we have a lot of running around. And so sometimes you just have to kind of turn on music and just let them dance, let them do whatever. And there's other times where they'll actually catch on to a routine. So it's better to be repetitive and fun music, something upbeat, something that they absolutely love. Because regardless, they're going to be absolutely adorable.
Yeah. So we see on TV, there's like dance moms and I think dancing dolls. Is there really like a hard culture for dance?
I believe there is. Those shows, I mean, those girls, I think, are under an immense amount of pressure. And I want to be the complete opposite of what you all see on TV, as well as my mom. So I have expectations, and we don't do that.
So what does a normal day look like for Footprints?
Well, we practice twice a week. So I have my older girls who, that's the intermediate squad. I have them on Tuesday evenings, and I have the junior squad on Thursday evenings. We practice for an hour. We've been so blessed to be able to utilize the Rock from Mission Waco. We're actually moved down to Franklin next month, and so we're really excited to have our own space. And so we'll increase classes and everything then. And then, I mean, typically we're performing throughout the community, Deck the Halls, the Cultural Arts Festival, pretty much whatever we can get invited to. My biggest and most joyous thing every year is the Juneteenth parade and the performances thereafter. So that's what I look forward to every year.
So do you guys have a certain genre that you teach, or is it
across
all ranges?
It's across all ranges. I want them to be able to go into high school or go into college. They want to try out for the drill team or pep squad or whatever the case may be. We do lyrical, modern, tap, jazz. I throw a little cheerleading in there, just whatever to keep the girls interested.
Yeah, so you mentioned cheerleading. Is it segmented by interest? So some girls lean more towards dance and some lean more towards cheer, or is everything kind of intertwined?
No, everybody in Footprints has to learn everything. I typically chop it up in 6 weeks, kind of like they do at school, just so they know at that 6 week period we're moving on to something else.
So do you guys have a season, or is it a year round?
It's year round. I usually take off 1 month in the summer, and then Thanksgiving, Christmas, New Year's, different days like that. And sometimes give myself a break depending on what's going on.
Yeah. So there are plenty of studies that share the impact of creativity in young people. In what ways have you seen dance performing benefiting these young ladies in their day-to-day life?
There are some of them that I've just seen blossom, and it's, I mean, such a beautiful thing. They've gone off to Tennyson Middle School and made cheerleader, or they've entered in art contests where they've had to draw, and these are girls who would never really say a word, you know, during class. And I mean, they talk, they're very talkative, and they're laughing, and they're making jokes. So I've got to see so many little girls just grow, and it's the most beautiful thing.
Yeah, I've seen on you guys' Facebook page that there are some girls right now who have made the cheer squad or the dance squad in their middle or high school teams, even with school being closed. So how has that reception been for your girls to have that kind of benefit of still making teams even though school is closed?
I think that's amazing, especially those who are at that age where cheerleading dance is available in the middle school. That gets to the point where I start kind of losing girls sometimes. I mean, we're blessed to still have some that do both, but just to see them be able to take what they've learned in footprints and go further is more rewarding than anything.
Yes. So you mentioned earlier that you guys practice twice a week. How has that been impacted due to COVID?
I've completely shut down. I started a YouTube page, and I've basically at this point just uploaded some workouts so the girls can work out, stretching, different things like that while they're at home. But we've completely shut down, no virtual classes, and I feel I don't like the virtual classes. I'm in a group with several other studio owners, and you get to hear the pros and cons of the virtual classes, and I just decided that wouldn't be best for what me and my girls, you know, do. We all miss each other, and so we keep in touch. I keep in touch with the parents, but we've completely been shut down.
Yeah, I have a cousin that does ballet, and she's been doing Zoom classes, but I can imagine how hard it is to teach over, you know, a computer.
Yes.
So moving forward, do you guys have a timeline of when you think that you'll be able to get back into the groove of things?
So I actually told my parents yesterday we'll open up the week of June the 8th. I've been kind of campaigning and doing fundraisers the last several weeks. I want to make sure that every girl has her own mask. I want to make sure that they have hand sanitizer to go in their, you know, backpacks, you know, a thermometer to check. You know, I'm revamping all of my forms and just making sure that we're going to be safe. So I just want a little extra time to make sure that everyone's going to be okay when they come in.
Yeah, so if someone in the community, one of our listeners, would like to help with your fundraising, how can they get in touch with you, and how can they support you?
You can go to our Facebook page, Footprints Dance Company. I am actually, I've actually launched a t-shirt line called Anchored, and I'm selling t-shirts for $15. They're in our colors. A portion of all proceeds do go to Footprints, or they can just contact me on our website at www.footprintsdance.com.
So years from now, when your girls are looking back on, you know, their time in Footprints, what is one lesson that you hope that they take with you and apply for the rest of their lives?
Never quit.
Never quit?
Never quit.
What's the importance of the never quit?
For them to just continue to push forward, regardless to what comes at you. We are very Christ-centered, and so we talk a lot about what God has for you and is for you. So regardless of what you run into, you never give up, you never quit, you keep going, and you're fearfully and wonderfully made.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Ashley, for sitting down with us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
You can follow and connect with Footprints Dance Company on their Facebook page. This conversation will be posted on kwbu.org. You can also visit creativewaco.org/blog for content related to this episode. Whether dancers, painters, or saxophone players, artists are a central part of American society. When economic trouble hits, it's good if the rest of us remember that. Here's David Smith with David in Art.
Last week, I mentioned that within the relief and recovery programs of Franklin Roosevelt's New Deal during the Great Depression, there were measures specifically designed to help artists who needed relief as much as any American worker. In helping artists, these programs also nourished American culture. When you look over the roster of artists who were involved with the New Deal, you'll find some names you've likely heard of. People like Jackson Pollock, Diego Rivera, Phil Guston, Mark Rothko, John Sloan, Stuart Davis, and Jacob Lawrence all took part in one or more of the federal art projects. For some of them, the assistance came toward the end of productive careers. For others, it was the thing that gave them a boost at the beginning. Today, with social distancing measures still in place, galleries, museums, art fairs, and music venues, large and small, have all had to close their doors for months now. The artists who depend on these outlets for their survival have been hit hard, and the entire arts ecosystem is at risk. Back in March, Congress passed a $2 trillion aid package containing some provisions to help American artists and art organizations weather this economic disaster. Within that $2 trillion was $75 million for the arts. That's 0.00375% of the total, in case you're curious. The money is being distributed through the National Endowment for the Arts, which is the way it should be. No one in the federal government knows more about the needs of the national art scene and the way arts funding works than does the staff at the NEA, many of whom have worked there for years through multiple presidential administrations. The endowment distributed nearly half of the money directly to state and regional arts agencies by the end of April, and those organizations will themselves channel it on down to the local level. The Texas Commission on the Arts, for example, received $668,500 in emergency funds to distribute throughout the state. That money has to go a long way. It designated 500 arts organizations in the state to receive help. Artists in Texas are also eligible for emergency grants from the Mid-America Arts Alliance. The rest of the aid will be distributed by the endowment itself via direct grants to nonprofits all across the U.S. The money can be used for salary support for critical positions, it can be used for fees owed to artists and other personnel, and this money, because it's emergency funds, can even be used for facilities costs such as rent and utilities. The arts are a crucial part of who we are and one of the central elements that help us flourish as humans. Tending to them now as best we can will help them survive in the future.
Welcome back. You're listening to Conversations with Creative Waco on KWVU, and I'm your host, Kennedy Sam. Please join us in welcoming local country and southern rock musician, singer, and songwriter, Melinda Adams. Hey, Melinda. Thank you for joining us today.
Of course.
So growing up in Cypress, Texas, so that's like the Houston area, your musical career started in middle or high school with the flute.
Yes.
So how did you end up with the flute?
So actually, when I first started, I was going to Arnold Middle School down in Northwest Houston, and the band director there clearly needed some more French horn players and was really pushing me to play French horn. So I was like, I really don't want to play the French horn. I was like, that looks weird. I want to play the flute. That looks, you know, looks interesting. And so they actually brought, you know, bring you in as fifth graders and have you try out every instrument. And so the flute, after trying all of them, was the one I really wanted to do. And then ended up doing it all through middle school. And my mom, you know, kind of made me a deal and said, I'll buy you a brand new instrument if you stick through it all, you know, all throughout high school. And then stuck with it and did the whole, you know, honor band, region band, all state, all that good stuff, all the competitions. And turned out I was pretty decent at it. So ended up deciding to major in it.
Oh, yeah. So you came to Waco by ways of Baylor.
Yes.
So what did you study exactly?
So I actually was a music ed major, with my primary instrument being flute. So that was, and then I decided later you have to actually choose an applied minor to do your vocal, your musical jury on. And so my main instrument was flute that I did my main juries on, and then my applied minor was voice.
Nice. So yeah. Throughout your time and career, you've gone from flute into more of a guitar to singing. How has that transition been, and what kind of drafted you away a little bit from the flute?
Yeah, so I, you know, everybody kind of takes the church route at first. And so I was actually playing with a local Baptist church that had brought me in and said, you know, can you come sing with the choir? So I did that a little bit. And then, you know, they asked if I could help lead worship. And then that started that journey. And then it was actually working for the city of Waco, some people who were playing in local bands were like, hey, we need a singer. Can you come sing? And I was like, well, I guess I could do that. So then I, you know, kind of stepped to the side and started singing. And then, you know, turned out I was decent at that, I guess. And so started doing a little bit more of that. And then, you know, I met my boyfriend who was playing drums with the Sol Ross band at the time, and their bass player had just left and they needed a bass player. And so I was like, well, I was a music major, you know, I'll play bass. How hard could it be?
Right. Music theory is good for something.
Right. So, you know, I went to the store and bought like a little, you know, super cheap Fender Squire. Sorry, guys. And, you know, picked it up in a few weeks and started playing and just teaching myself the songs. And, kind of went from there on the commercial side, you know, it took off on that. And then that band was like, hey, how do you feel about playing bass and singing a couple songs on stage? And I was like, sure, I guess I could do that. And then it just kind of went from there.
Yeah. So who were some of your musical influences growing up, and how did that shape your sound?
Yeah, growing up, I had a little bit of everything. You know, my mom is from California. My dad's from Kansas. He's, you know, a small town country boy. And so for my dad, I had like, you know, the older classic rock and country. And then my mom raised me on Motown. So I feel like a lot of times when I write and stuff, it's definitely with some soul. And I really, really like female powerhouse vocals. So anybody says, you know, what's your sound like? It's definitely like a, you know, Linda Ronstadt or Melissa Etheridge or Wynonna Judd, you know, those type of female artists.
Yeah. So you stayed in Waco after graduating. What prompted you to make that decision?
I actually, this is sound terrible, but a boy at the time that I was seeing, we'd been together like 10 months and I was like, I guess you're all right, I'll stay, you know. But I actually really, really liked Waco. I liked it here. I had kind of built a life here. I had a community here. And after graduation, I did end up moving back to Houston for like 6 months. And I was like, man, this is terrible. Like, the traffic here is crazy. I don't miss this at all. I want to go back to Waco.
Where it takes 15 minutes to get anywhere.
Yeah, yeah. So I actually, you know, some friends of mine at the city called and they were like, hey, this job's opening up. You should come back. I was like, okay, I guess you're right. I should come back.
Yeah, so how has the music scene changed from, I guess, your time in college to now?
It is, I would say, there's some of the players that are still the same around the scene, and there's definitely some new players. I think, obviously, from when I was in college to now, you can, you know, think the Magnolia effect, that there's a lot more happening downtown. So there's a lot more venues coming into town, and I think that kind of brings a different type of music as well. Like, it used to be, you know, country music was the only genre in town that could get booked anywhere, and now there's going to be, I think now that there's a lot more genre, you know, friendly venues that will bring in alternative or, you know, rock or rap or, you know, you name it.
Yeah, it's so interesting seeing how many diverse genres we have in our community. Like when you're at Keep Waco Loud's open mic night, you can just see just the diversity in the crowd. So it's really nice to see all that we have in our community.
Yeah.
So as someone who works for the Waco Convention and Visitors Bureau and Tourism, and, you know, booking large events, when conferences and large group are looking for a city to bring their event to, how important is the arts and culture when making that decision?
I think it depends on the group. It depends on the group, their demographic, what type of conference it is. I've had some conferences who are, you know, their population is largely 30s, 40s, and 50s, and they are big on the nightlife and, you know, culture and what they can experience in this city and what the city's about. I've had other groups who are a little bit older and they just want to know about the golf course. So it kind of just depends on the group and what they're wanting and what they're needing and what type of free time that they have available throughout the conference.
Yeah, so as someone who's in both kind of lives, the performer life and the official city life, how does our music scene impact our community, if it does, or our economy?
Yeah, I think musicians have a really powerful voice. I think we are the quickest way to get the word out about stuff, because we do have so many people who come to shows and follow us, and we are pretty well plugged into the community. So I think that is definitely something that, you know, can be a cause for change locally. But I think as far as larger scale right now, that's still a work in progress. We don't quite have large acts bringing in hotel room nights yet. I think eventually we will. Like, we're constantly growing. I think it's definitely, you know, on the horizon, just not quite yet.
Yeah. And now we have a bunch of hotels to suit those big concerts that
we're getting there. Yeah. There's three more being built right now. Yeah. MLK, and I can't wait.
Yeah. So tourism and live music were both pretty much impacted by the COVID pandemic. First off, how are you doing? Are you doing okay?
I am happy to have a job and be paying my bills. We'll say that.
Yeah, so many artists and creatives have experienced like a loss in creativity or just any other, like a bunch of other issues due to loss of gigs or whatever. Have you had to overcome any of those issues?
Absolutely. I think anybody who's, I think a lot of people have experienced that from the get-go. I know like the first two or three weeks, I had booked gigs all throughout, you know, through July and through August. I had gigs on the books for months, and everything throughout the end of March, April, May, all canceled. All my events at work had canceled through June, so I wasn't able to work on that. They had us not coming into the office, so I was, you know, working from home and not being able to work on my stuff, essentially, because with music canceled and with all the events canceled, there was nothing I could do to stay productive like I normally do in my normal life. And, you know, everybody says, now I have so much time to write music. And, you know, when you're in that headspace of just like my life is completely turned upside down, I was in a state of depression there for a little while, just trying to, you know, figure out what's this going to look like in a few weeks? Am I going to be able to pay my bills? Am I going to be able to come out of this okay?
Right. Yeah. So have you been able to kind of use music to as a way to kind of bolster your spirits, or have you still been able to create, or have you had that inspiration to create since then?
A little bit. I had one song I was working on, and it was good. Like I was getting some stuff out that, you know, I needed to get out, and I sent it to my uncle, and my uncle's like, "Well, so we're working through some stuff, aren't we?"
I was like,
"Yeah, I guess it is a little dark, huh?" So I was like, "Yeah, I should probably just keep that one on the DL."
Yeah, save it for the archives.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Keep Waco Loud recently announced that they're partnering with local performers to offer live music porch performances through Make It in Waco. Are you connected to that in any way? Like, will you be performing or?
Yes. They reached out to me and asked me if I would be willing to sign on the list as one of the performers. And absolutely. I think, you know, porch sessions or house concerts of any kind is just, yeah, they're great.
Have you ever done a performance in that kind of intimate setting?
I have. I used to play a venue up northwest of Fort Worth, and I have a couple of regulars that come out there whenever I play there, and they hired me and a friend to play their private party. This is, you know, not too long ago, but they have like this lake house with like this gazebo, and we really weren't expecting that when we got there. We walked in, you know, we sat up, and it was gorgeous, but it was very much everybody just kind of sits out there with lawn chairs, and you play music, and you get to talk to them while you're playing, and kind of get to know them, you know, while they're getting to know you.
So your style is Southern rock. Do you play any other genres when you're like building your set, or is it just mainly, you know, whatever is really on your, I don't know, track?
Yeah, we do. So we do a mix of country and Southern rock. We do like some, depending on which musicians I've got playing with me, we do, you know, anything from, you know, Led Zeppelin to Patsy Cline to, you know, Wynonna, and kind of a mix of in between. We do some older stuff, some younger stuff. You know, I think, again, it kind of depends on which people have playing with me. I kind of cater to their strengths and mine just to make sure, you know, everything sounds good.
Yeah. So do you have a set band that you work with, or is it just like a collection of friends that you just call on depending on the...
I do. I've got Curtis Bell's been playing drums with me. He's also my boyfriend, and we've been together over 7 years and playing together. And then James Martin is one of our best friends. He plays lead guitar for us over, you know, that and longer now. And then on bass we've got Jared Shaw, who's been playing with us now I think over just over 3 years now. And then we kind of rotate out the second lead guitar player with just who's available.
Yeah.
But those three are pretty solid.
So as businesses begin to reopen and schedule live music for the summertime, what hopes do you have for the future of Waco's music and entertainment scene post COVID?
Yeah, I think that everyone needs to remember that, you know, everyone is coming out of this. So, you know, if a bar can't offer what they paid before, you know, they're hurting just like we're hurting. You know, it's going to be everybody kind of work together to rebuild this. And then hopefully eventually it will continue to grow. You know, we were getting some really good momentum pre-COVID. And I think that if we all band together and help one another, that we could still, you know, get back to that and continue to grow things.
Yeah. So how can our locals and listeners help and support you and other artists and performers during this time?
Share your friends' stuff. Like, even if you don't ever go to a show, if you don't want to donate a single dollar, comment on your friends' stuff, share your friends' stuff. Like, social media advertising is the easiest way you can support a musician by helping get their music out there, helping get their shows out there, helping them advertise without them having to spend any money. That's the easiest way. And then, of course, like, once shows open back up, you know, go see your friends. Go support them. Go grab dinner and a drink or, you know, whatever.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Melinda, for taking the time to sit down with us today.
Of course.
You can connect with Melinda on her website, melindaadamsmusic.com, or through her music Facebook page at Melinda Adams Music. You can also support local performers and bring tunes to your front door on makeitinwaco.com. This conversation will be posted on kwbu.org. You can also visit creativewaco.org/blog for content related to this episode. Catch the next episode on Friday, June 26th, for more deep dives into local arts and culture. In the meantime, we hope you all stay Waco safe, cover your face, and protect your space. This has been Conversations with Creative Waco on KWVU, and I'm your host, Kennedy Sam. Thanks for tuning in.